It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I haven't noticed.
Hello everybody, Nicknam here, and welcome to Bigger on the Inside, episode number 17. Yeah, I had to make sure I got that right. Nicknam wants to introduce regular Bigger on the Inside associate Ringo.
Hello.
Yeah. And Nicknam also wants to bring back the lovely Geofax.
I'm starting to wonder why Nicknam is talking in third person. Hello.
Nicknam likes talking in the third person and has nothing at all to do with this entire episode that we're talking about.
Oh, okay. I get what you're talking about. Please continue.
Yay. I thought I'd just see if you guys would get on.
Oh,
that,
I get it.
Yeah.
That's depressing.
we'll get to that, but yeah, I was really happy with that. How have you guys been,
Mr. Fax? Do you want to start? Because I've got a lot to say.
Okay, well, I'll keep it short and sweet because I'm bloody well tired. I've had work move around, so my weekends have shifted. So instead of getting Saturday to Monday, I now have Wednesday to Friday as my days off. So I technically get more time in between shifts, but it's still just like, yeah, everything's a bit dragging at the moment, but I'll pep up soon. So, yeah. Ringo.
All right. So in the past, this question has me answered in like 10 words or less. But I've had some stuff happen. Nothing big, but stuff. So I have split it into several categories for you guys today.
Nothing big.
I appreciate this.
So, I've got a tab that says school, and if school is nothing. Carrying on. Okay, I'll go games next. Last week, I collected my PlayStation VR, and
woo!
Mr. Fax asked how it was when he first joined. I said, no, you wait until I tell you. So I shall tell you now. It is a ton of fun. Everyone in the family's now tried it, and we all can't get enough of it. I haven't... Now, it came with a game, VR Worlds, which is like a bunch of mini-games, but I haven't actually bought an official game for it yet, because I don't know what to get first, but...
Resident Evil 7.
Yes, see, I played the demo for that, and I took three breaks in a five-minute demo. That's how horror games sit. It was so... Because, look, I can't say horror games anyway, but the fact that what the demon thing did to me while I was, I could see her in a first person view and the music and the, I don't know. But yeah, I haven't even actually bought an actual game yet.
She did things to
she
me,
did
I'm
things,
no longer clean.
Terrible things that involved dragging and knives and friends dying. Anyway, but yeah, no, it's really fun. I've just been playing a bunch of demos and that VR Worlds game, and that's already served me for the past week. It's a ton of fun. And yeah, so that's that. Off VR, I've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn on PS4 still since exams are done. That game has gotten all my attention. And that has been fun as well. Alright, next. Movies. So, at school, exams are done, so nothing's been happening. So, my flick chart addiction has skyrocketed. So, if I'm in a class and things are boring, I'm often on flick chart. For those of you who don't know what flick chart is, it's just the website where you pick movies over other movies, and you form your favorites. So now, after using it for about a couple of months, I now have a top 50 that I'm happy with, and I'm just shocked. So that's that. And then I tweeted out about a library run. I'm really proud of the really small stuff, hence why I'm going into detail.
Yep.
On Sunday, I went on a library run. This is a library, not a DVD exclusive library. It's a council library. So the movies it has is often But I grabbed Spotlight, Edge of Tomorrow, Ex Machina, Wish I Was Here, and Imitation Game. One of them I've seen, four I haven't. Well, I saw Edge of Tomorrow 2 nights ago, and I loved that. And I'm seeing Ex Machina tonight. Mr. Fax has told me.
You're going to like Ex Machina.
Yeah, syncast, and then have really cemented that idea of the movie being fucking amazing.
It's a great
start. So movie. I'm excited for that. Because I want to expand my film horizons, and starting to do that now. And then that's basically it. Filmmaking wise, nothing much is happening. I hope to get a short film going in the coming months and getting Mr. Fax involved, because who else? But that is it. That's been my life in the past week. That's it. Nickname, how about you?
Ooh, that's going to be hard to talk. All right.
Oh, please.
Okay, well, I'll talk about the Doctor Who related thing.
Mm-hmm.
I got to meet one of my idols. Celia Piccola, she's a phenomenal comedian. I've been into her stuff for the past couple of years. So when she was announced that she was going to be a guest on Whovians, I totally freaked out because I wanted her on the show since the big... Like, as soon as Whovians was announced, I asked Will, the Doctor of Who, if he knew if she was going to be on the show at any point. And he had no idea who I was talking about. That didn't matter to me. But yeah, just finding out that she actually was, and I actually got to like get her autograph, took photos with her. Oh, so good. So yeah, that's probably been a major highlight. Yesterday in particular, I finished my exams for this semester as well, so I now get to do other things. Like finish Uncharted 2 finally. Also today, if we're gonna go movies, I bought Goodfellas. So I went to a Trash and Treasure thing that's happening near my house, and they sell, they just basically anything that's crap. Basically the gist of a Trash and Treasure is just people go to a place, it's like a garage sale, but like in this one giant area. Anyway, point is, there are a lot of like movie sections, and Goodfellas just happened to be in a really good quality state, and it was for $1. So, you know what? That's a bargain to me. I've heard great things about it. I'm going to watch it after about 30 other movies that I've already got that I need to watch, which I can now do as I have free time, and that's gonna be great for roll credits when we finally get talking about that after this Doctor Who series is over.
I can't wait until that comes back.
Love a good bit of roll credits. But, I got over my sickness. I was practically like a 90-year-old woman on Friday. I'm glad I got to recover in time for my final exam yesterday, and now I don't sound too bad on the podcast. GFX would suggest otherwise, but...
I just asked if you were sick. I didn't say anything about
that. I thought that was implicitly mentioned there, but I'll take your word for it.
I don't know
your psyche.
Just a dad.
But yeah. Apart from that, I'm just easing my way into freedom for a while again, which is going to be nice. But yeah, that wraps all the things that I've been up to.
Could I have one quick thing? Your treasure trove little... The thing you said about the treasure thing spawned something that I needed to say. Back to the movies tab. I don't know why this year, but I have signed myself up for so much shit in terms of going out, because I don't go out. I'm an indoor guy. But next Sunday, I'm seeing the Cornetto trilogy at the Astor, and I'm so fucking excited. Yes. There'll be Baby Driver memorabilia, which is cool, because I don't know what that would be, so I'm excited. Then 5 days later, 6 days later, I'm seeing Baby Driver advanced screening. I'm excited about that. And then the month after that, there is a movie market at the Astor where they have, like, posters and, props and all that, films and stuff. So anything movie related they have there. So I'm going to be losing a lot of money over these couple months. But yeah, that's it. That's what that reminded me of. So I'm excited.
You're going to be sending us some of that stuff, right?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Like, I want some good posters.
Yeah, I will.
I want to place my Hobbit poster with the Lord of the Rings, if possible.
I'll get you a better movie. Don't worry.
Thank you. I don't hate the Hobbit as much as you, but I'd rather any other.
I like
movie.
The first two. I'll give them that. Okay.
Yeah.
Before I go on a rant, shall we proceed to the main stuff?
Yes. All right. Yes. One of the main purposes that we are talking about this podcast. Episode 9. Oh my god. Episode 9 of Series 10, The Empress of Mars. General thoughts.
Facts.
This was actually just a surprisingly nice episode. Like, it didn't do much in terms of advancing the overarching plot. It just brought about a bit of characterization, but generally speaking, it was just a nice little ball that everyone, like, there were certain ties to previous episodes of Doctor Who with the Ice Warriors and the new Empress of the Ice Warriors, a la the episode, or the title, I mean. But yeah, I will advance upon that later on, but I don't actually have any main negatives with the story set up, so yeah.
I agree with what Connor said. I don't think this episode is, you know, it doesn't do anything grand or spectacular, but for what it is, it was enjoyable, and I thoroughly, I don't know what Gaddis, I think he's mentioned it, I know, but Gaddis's interest with the Ice Warriors, I have no issue with it, because he's done some great stuff with it, which prompts a question from me before we continue. Yep. What do you guys think his best episode is? Because I think this is in contention. If not, this is it. Because I'm curious what you guys think.
Well, this is going to steal some of what I was going to say.
Okay, no, you can continue on if you want.
No, I was going to say, this is my favourite Gator story.
Okay, there we go. I think, I think I agree with that.
Prior to this was probably The Unquiet Dead, but I still had minor problems with The Unquiet Dead. This is one of my favourites of Series 10.
Mm.
I think this is just under Extremis for me, so this is my second favourite of this entire series.
Huh.
Which, yeah. I didn't think I would say that. I didn't ever think I would say that even about a Gator story. But, I think it's just a credit to Mark Gatiss. He wrote a phenomenal Ice Warrior story, and just, yeah, this was such a surprise for me. Like GFX said, I don't think I have many negatives I don't think I have any negatives about the story whatsoever. So they're my general
thoughts. I have
thoughts.
Two minor ones, but nothing groundbreaking, because
I've got one minor one, and it's not really even a negative.
I feel like we have the same one.
I'll address that.
Given the way you talk, I
don't know. I think mine's pretty nitpicky.
Mine is
in regards to it.
Yeah. Anyway, we shall get to that. So positives or negatives? Shall we start off with?
Well, let's go negatives, because I don't think we have.
We don't have
I don't have.
Nope.
Yeah. Mr. Fax, do you have any negatives?
With the story and the characters per se, I mean, there are a few plot conveniences with falling down holes and whatnot.
a literal pothole.
The soldiers were farcically British, but not to a point that I was super annoyed with them. Like, what's his name? I suppose saying the one with the mustache is a bit nondescript, really.
Neville Catchlove.
Catchlove.
Neville Catchlove.
Yeah, he was a bit like, all right, sit down, mate. You're walking right out of theatre.
Catchlove.
I don't really have many problems with that. I do, however, have a problem with Mark Gatiss himself, because he made this response, which
might have been out of just like faith, like being faithful to the era and whatnot, but just in like as a public thing, it wasn't a very wise decision. There is one character within the British troop, I guess, who is not of European descent. He is black. And something that...
Vinci.
Yeah, something that...
Sorry,
yeah.
I know them by names.
I don't pay that much attention, but thank you.
It's all good. It's all good, you're welcome.
Yeah, so he's black, and Gatiss apparently got a bit worked up over this. I don't know if you guys know this story, but he actually was very insistent that they recast or cut that actor out because he hadn't seen proof that there was a black man in the British infantry or whatever the military term is for that group of that era.
No, wasn't aware of that.
So yeah, wow. He was very insistent and they had to actually go and research, which probably should have been done beforehand, but research the era and be like, yep. Yeah, here's one guy. Is that enough? And that was only when Mark Gatiss sort of surrendered and let the actor be a part of it. And I found that a little bit offensive. Not like I'm sort of like Marky-poo. You've done some good stuff in the past. You've done some horrendous stuff in the past. Don't do more of that. Horrendous being Ruggles of Sherwood. Sorry. Yeah, I just feel like that was a bit.
You ruined your picks for next week, man.
Telling it too early, but still, actually, I feel like he overreacted, and that has slightly tainted this episode for me. I still think it's a good episode, like in and of itself. As part of Peter Capaldi, da da da, like Bill Noddle, great and everything. I just feel like him having taken those actions and for him to not have been as discreet about it, yeah, it makes me not want to respect his work as much, which is sad, in my opinion. Otherwise, that's my only big negative.
I can understand that. Personally, I think. When it comes to art,
I know he was
kind of have to. Yeah, sorry.
I know he's going for accuracy and everything of the era, but there's like if we go a few episodes back to Thin Ice, where Bill is walking around with the Doctor, and she's just like, "There's loads of black people," and he's like, "Yeah, history's a whitewash." It's like. You could have had that line come across line, again, so it's like, yeah.
Yeah, no, I understand why you would think that. As a personally, even hearing that, I think it doesn't bug me, mainly because art isn't reflective of a person necessarily.
Yeah.
Like, in 10 years, I don't think anyone will remember that Mark Gatiss incident, but many people will still watch that episode, and I think that's the important thing you have to take into consideration when I look at an episode. I don't really try to take in any outside controversy. Like, I know last week with Pyramid, they cut out the terrorist line, and like if. And that could be a detractor, I don't know why it would be, but the idea of, it was influenced by political reasons. But in, 5 years, no one will even remember that that was a line that was cut out of an episode. It's just, I think, yeah, it's just the reason. I kind of think the episode needs to stand on its own, whether or not the writer has other opinions.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I actually had this discussion yesterday with my friend about, now we're talking about this in a movie sense, but when you have people like Mel Gibson and Casey Affleck.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah,
I love some of their movies, and even though what they did I may not tolerate morally, I don't want that to affect the film that I'm watching, the art that I'm viewing, and how much I like it. Because I agree, I tend to separate the art from the artist in terms of any controversial moral stuff. So yeah, that's actually interesting. I was talking about that yesterday. But yeah, good to hear that, you know, there are other people that can sort of... Obviously, people often... Sometimes the art gets negative controversy because of a person in it who did something 20 years ago, and it's like, come on, guys, just appreciate it for what it is and don't let this really take a huge effect. But yeah, Gaddis really let himself down with that one. I do agree. But in other instances, yeah. I think the episode was good, whether Gaddis did that or not. So, yeah.
So, do you have any more negatives in regards to that?
No, that's kind of the only thing, and I agree, basically, on not being able to separate art from artist, but it was a timing thing that I just read it within an hour of watching the episode, yeah. So I'm like, But yeah, who's going to put their hand up next for negatives?
I'll go next, because this is the thing. My only negative, and this feels so absurd me saying this, the lack of Nardole in this episode.
That's one of my points! I'll just...
Wait. I miss Nardi.
Wait. Here, there. There's a screenshot.
Wow.
Oh my goodness.
That's amazing.
Yeah, continue.
Yeah, but I understand why this was like... I understand why there was a lack of Nardole in this episode. But one thing that I've really noticed is the dynamic between the three of them has just become so good that... I hate when the TARDIS trio breaks up in some way. I'd never ever thought I would say that, considering where we came from in regards to the Husbands of Riversong, where Nardole was this comic relief, but now he's really become his own character, and it's just it's a shame just that it was only relegated to just minor scenes, and yeah, as I said, it was such a nitpicky negative, but as I said, that's probably my only detraction the entire episode. So Ringo,
so
what are your
I have
your negatives?
One nitpick. Well, they're both nitpicks because they're both pretty subjective, but this is just something personal. Overall, I thought this was a great episode. My positives are pretty general, but as far as negatives go, the Nardole thing can further expand in the Misty stuff, right? This is a personal thing, but I'm a bit upset that... Okay, cool, we didn't get to see Nardole in the action, but I would have loved to see a bit of Misty and Nardole as a just screwed-up TARDIS team that we deserve to see, you know? I find that would have been really fun. But then again, I don't know if that would have worked with the episode, so just a little personal note. But the personal negative I have is, compared to another iSorry episode of recent... The episode wasn't really trying to direct the Ice Warriors as sinister or scary, and that didn't necessarily detract from the episode, but I feel like in some scenes it could have added if the episode was directing them as a bit more scary, because they look fucking horrifying, but I didn't feel like they were, and that's obviously like a little nitpick, but my main negative is Nardole. So
personally, I think that was the intention, though.
That was obviously intended.
That they, like, instead of them being the invaders, they're the ones that are being invaded.
Mm, yeah.
So...
I agree. I don't know. I felt sort of like... it might have not necessarily been the better option, but in some of the cases, it would have been nice to see what it would be like if they were directed. Maybe not at the start, but I don't know. It's just a little point that I thought that weren't necessarily positives. But they're all nitpicks, because this was a pretty good episode.
Yeah. As I said... It's not. I would probably make this a high 8. Like, it's not like must watch, but it's probably one of the better or one of the best filler episodes I've watched in a while.
I really hope,
yeah,
whether it's Eaters of Light or the part two parter, I really hope one of those can get a must watch tag on it, because Red Heaven sent last season. I wouldn't put one on season 8 personally, but
here's the thing. When I did my Radio Times preview thing, the one that I was most anticipated for was episode 11, World Enough in Time. So, if my perception of Moffat is correct, based on his past track record,
yes,
then episode 11 should be a phenomenal episode.
I really hope it is. Desperately.
That's setting a standard that he's put himself in.
as far as finals go, he's definitely, you know, done some terrible stuff for himself, because if he can't reach that standard, if he makes a great episode as a final, that won't be enough for him. It has to be that one step further. It has to be better than great. It has to be fan-fucking-tastic. So it better be, because so far this season's been great or good, but nothing Heaven Sent yet.
Nothing stand out. Yeah. I think, personally, I think Extremis comes closest for me, which, what a shock, it's a Moffat episode.
But Moffat fanboy.
Coming from you.
I say that as in an ironic way, but nice for you to just throw that back at me. Thank you.
Yep. Gotta throw that shade when necessary.
Shit. You say shame.
Or Sonic.
I said shade.
Oh, shade. Okay, good. Because I don't feel shame in it at all.
Necessary. No.
Are we talking the regular kind of shade or Sonic shades?
Both.
Well, Sonic shade's a great thing, so whatever you want to.
I would. I really want to see the Sonic shades in the finale.
But
just,
I think we're gonna have some fun stuff with that if they include it.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued so much, but we're getting off topic. Of course we are. All right. So we've talked about our really minor negatives. who wants to go first in positives? Because I'm going to go last on that, because I got a lot to say in regards to positives.
Well, I don't have much to say, so I think I'll just squeeze in first. In terms of, like, I saw this episode once, so I just grabbed what I grabbed there. But in the past, we've had one-off side characters haven't really been that fleshed. But I love that Gaddis took the time to get these soldiers developed to an extent that he could get in the 45 minutes. So we could see their own individual goals, their motives, like personalities form, which I thought was a great effort, and he did so really well. Gaddis's overall vibe of this episode, I haven't seen a lot of classic episodes, but you could tell, like, he was so... Gaddis loves the classic series so much, and I love the vibe this episode took. Overall, slower pace, but the environment, the atmosphere and all that, it was really rewarding, and it was a great throwback, both in villain and in general tone, to the classic series. And also, this relationship that formed, that was completely unexpected, between Bill and Araxa. I liked the little girl power thing there, honestly. It surprised me, so unless it's a really bad thing, which it wasn't, surprises often get a positive for me. So, I enjoyed seeing this little, like, you know, hey, you're a girl, let's have our own little cool relationship. And I thought that was a really nice way of unexpected thing that I didn't really think would happen. So, that was good. But yeah, the story was great. They're my three main positives, so I shall let... What's so funny?
It reminds me of the David Tennant line in Fires of Pompeii. It's like, don't mind me, it's just us girls. Yeah, that's the only thing I could think of when that happened.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking back to that, and I'm just okay. Thank you for that.
You're welcome,
Mr. Fax.
Okay, so let me crack the fingers. Let me get on my spiel before the spiel gets too big. Before we have a Spielberg. Sorry, often. Thinking about that for a bit.
that was well done.
Thank you. So this episode, I went back and watched a lot of the extra stuff for this one, because the visual elements within this, like, the way things were shot, the way things had been designed, you know, the little bits where, like, the gems were around the Empress's bed and the alignment, how that sort of called back to Rassilon. Like, I don't know if there was any intentions behind that, or if it was just a design that they had come up with, but it just looked gorgeous. And I loved the whole, the Empress sort of laying down, and then the golden sort of sheen that covers her flakes off, and she becomes, like, green and active and sort of intent, and her teeth, and the way she had the lizard skin around her mouth, which is one of the things BBC has done really well, is the reptilian scales, and done that with the Silurians and whatnot, and oh, I was really interested in this. And I can't remember the guy's name, but the first Ice Warrior, when he gets picked up by Catch Glove and the rest of the troop. Oh, Friday, thank you.
It's all good.
Yeah, he had an eye missing. And the way they had done it, like, just little bits of webbing or something on the inside, it was sort of just like, oh, that's cool. So yeah, that, and the spacesuits, the way they're designed, you had the steampunk spacesuit, and even the ones that Bill, yes, Nardole, and Doctor have been wearing, it was all really sleek, and just, oh, and the way the shots had been composed in this, so there was one where the Doctor was in the foreground, and it was a close-up, but he didn't feel oversaturated, because there have been some shots where his lips have been slightly purple and his skin's been a little bit orange, and I've kind of gone, you might want to tone down on that. But this one was so gorgeous. Like, he had the red backdrop, the soldiers with the red uniforms and the hats. And let's not forget the little CGI animation that played when a soldier was shot by the sonic beam or whatever it was. Compacted into these little like messes. Yes. That was,
I forgot
to
mention that.
Oh,
so good. Yes. That was so good.
I'm just really enjoying this. And my last positive got me so, like, round the bend. It's the very end of the episode when Missy is revealed to be piloting the TARDIS. And the Doctor Doctor's like, no, this is not what we agreed to. But she says, are you all right? And he goes, like, no, we have to put you back in the vault. And then she goes, no, but seriously, are you all right? And how Missy's theme is playing in the background, something is wrong. It's a good kind of, well, it's good for me, because I'm watching, I'm like, I don't actually know what's happening. And it's not like, because everything, it's not because I feel like the episode's being dumb, it's because I feel like there's a smart direction that it's heading in, and I'm like, I want to know what's happening, something's wrong, Missy is doing the sort of like fanboy thing.
What's
where I'm
planning?
Really in the zone, and that is good writing. Like, you know how in Heaven Sent he had good editing in it, and everything lined up to make this magical ball that is that episode. It was like someone had taken out the chunk of, like, that bit of writing and that bit of acting and that bit of editing and the way that music was playing and that, and just formed a slightly smaller ball to add on to this episode. And it's like, I'm feeling it. I want more. Moffat, give it to me, please. So, yeah. Hopes are getting a little high, but oh, that bit. Mwah.
They've really built up the idea of, you know, Missy and how she's changing, but is she? And it's tampered, as we've seen from Connor just now, with so many people's minds, that this episode, the two-parter, which we'll presume explain everything, is being hyped up a lot based on these endings to these episodes. So, damn it, Missy. Oh.
Is it vain for me to say that I think this is the best Doctor-Master relationship we've ever seen on screen?
No.
Okay. I'm just expecting like one person to be like, Delgado and the Third Doctor is still the best, and that's understandably so, but I feel like these two are just so on par with each other. Like, they... just whenever those two are on screen, just having a conversation, you shut up and you pay attention. It's just how the dynamic works. It's just... they're just two phenomenal actors. They're just... oh, they're just fantastic together. And it shows on screen. Like, as you mentioned, one of my highlights of the entire episode was that 2-minute brief thing, and she only says like 10 words. And it's just... oh, the entire... as I said, it's so great watching this with an audience. Because...
I bet.
You tend to see how what your thoughts are against like other people's, and everyone was dead silent when that scene was on, when Missy asked the Doctor if he was all right. Oh, it's just it's so great. It's just, I love that dynamic. Are we going into my positives?
Yes, we are. I'll relinquish that right.
All right. The pre-title sequence. Oh my god, this was so fun to watch. Just like the Dr. Nardole and Bill just casually chilling in NASA. And Bill's like asking the Doctor about the man on the moon, and he's like, oh, that's a very human thing to ask. And he's like, well, I am the human. And then it goes into this really awesome reveal of God Save the Queen.
Yes.
Down on Mars. and the music is playing, and then you just get this really cheeky smile from the Doctor. Like, that is a great pre-title sequence. Like, a lot of the time, a pre-title sequence tends to give you an idea as to your thoughts on the episode. It's like, it's almost like a trailer in a way, the pre-title sequence, because it sets up a lot of what's to come. And yeah, this was such a great start for this episode. The movie references. I'm a movie lover. I love the Terminator reference. I love
how about the other
reference
there?
And the Frozen reference. The Doctor was mentioning Frozen, and he's like this really happy face when he says it. I'm like, yeah, you like that, Doctor. it's such an obscure thing that you wouldn't think the Doctor has seen, but hey, there you go. You mentioned before about the spacesuits. Oh, I love the spacesuits. The design is so great. And you guys mentioned before about the different soldiers and the unique characteristics. Like, the fact that I know these people by name just goes to show how nicely developed they were in the episode. Like, you had Colonel Godsaker, the guy who deserted his men, and yeah, he was attempted. Well, they tried to execute him for cowardice, but it went wrong. And then we have someone like Neville Catchlove. Neville Catchlove.
Oh, sorry. That's lovely little train.
That was,
yeah, I will
nice
be back in one moment.
All good, Ed. All good. Yeah, but you have like Neville Catchlove, who's just this... he's a good-looking arsehole. he just wants to get home by any means.
Yeah, that...
then we have Jackdaw.
You've really
Jackdaw
done your...
Jackdaw loves addressing himself in the third person. I didn't even need to do this research. I just know it just based on like, the one watching.
It's like we give Gaddis a ton of shit, but his characters are just, especially in this episode, he really went there and just delivered them all with personality and goals, and I think that's fucking amazing of him. It gives me all respect for him as a writer.
Yeah. Like we praised the girl who waited for characterization.
Uh-huh.
This was phenomenal in characterization, in my opinion. but seriously, Jackdaw loves getting his food. just the fact that he would just address himself in third person just is very, very reminiscent of Victorian London. Like, even Neville Catchlove addresses himself in third person at one point. And I can't help but love just everything about it. Like, even even the good old English with your sweet fatty Adams and your runny nothing. Oh, it's just so fun to just watch play out on screen. What else? I love the very subtle nod to Tooth and Claw with the painting of Queen Victoria. That was very nicely done. You guys mentioned about how visually stunning this episode is. It really is. I can't describe that at all. And I love the new design of the Ice Warrior. Like, I think out of all the ones I've seen, this is definitely the best one I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a pretty good fan of Cold War's one, but
this I have Cold War's one right in front of me as a figure, and I agree with you, actually. Sorry, Cold War.
But it's just, I just love the design. Yeah, you guys mentioned about the Ice Warrior weapon, which is absolutely badass. What else? The Ice Warrior pods lighting up one by one. That, gave me such Tomb of the Cybermen vibes. Oh, it's just so good to just watch these things just light up one after another. It was that was creepily cool, and I love that. I love the resolution to the episode, though. Like, I know there wasn't much of a complication to begin with. It was just this conflict between the two, but just Godsaker shooting Catch Love, and then the alliance forming between the Ice Warriors and the humans through mutual soldier respect. That was awesome. Topped off by the whole "God save the Queen" part, which I'm not kidding, made me quite emotional. Like, that entire thing where he surrenders himself, and just it's just phenomenal just to watch that scene play out. Like, this just so emotional. And even the quote from the doctor when he's like when Bill's asked, like, "How did you know that was going to happen?" It's like, "Always been my problem, thinking like a warrior." I was like,
oh my goodness.
Oh my god, such a good line. Just, and it instantly reminded me of Day of the Doctor. And even the Zygon inversion, just because you believe it. He 100% does think like a warrior. Like, that was the entire premise of the Zygon inversion, was him trying to outthink the Zygons and the humans through mutual dislike of war. What's this? Not a positive. Yeah. I know. I'm getting to. bloody Geofax has to mention, message me saying we've got to talk about Alpha Centauri. Yes, I'm getting to that. The Alpha Centauri shock. Oh my god, I love the Curse of Peladon. So, the fact that they brought back the actress who played
that's dedication. Alpha
Centauri in the original, that was such good fan service there. And I love the fact that this is basically a precursor to that story. What a surprise, and I love it. I love hearing their love for that story as well. I didn't think I was the only one, but I didn't think it was as loved as I found out it was. But
yeah,
such a great story. Please, if you are getting into the classic series, Third Doctor story, The Curse of Peladon, it's so good. Just please watch that one. I love this because I'm a fan of paradoxes at the best of times. This entire episode is a bootstrap paradox. Like, the Doctor, like, he made the words of the surface for him to see, so that he could go to Mars in the first place to cause the entire story to happen. It's just, I loved it in Before the Flood, I love it here. and this is why I think the TARDIS now functioned and, like, brought Nardole back, is because it was a bootstrap paradox. The events had to happen in the first place. Like, that was the entire thing with Before the Flood. The TARDIS also played up in that story, and that was because the events had to happen in order for the Doctor to have seen it, basically. I know that a couple of people, I know, like, three people had a problem with the TARDIS coming back to the university. I'm like, no, I had no problem with it. I understood why. But,
You see, I actually had a different take on that. I thought it was setting
Ooh,
up...
Ooh, interesting. What's your take on it?
There's... Okay, there's a sort of rule in television. If it doesn't happen on screen, it didn't happen. But if something happens on... Like, something's set up on screen, and then that plot occurs, but without being on camera, it's because they want to be able for able to come back to it at a later point. So, with the whole sort of precipitation of John Sims, the Master, coming back, I thought this was the TARDIS going, right, this is the point at which Missy needs control of the TARDIS so that she can do a quick hop over to somewhere else while Nardole's not looking and set up the interaction with the Master, because she would have knowledge. She'd be like, I was back here when that happened, so if about now should meet up and everything. So I thought the TARDIS flew away for her, but that's why I got extra... I was even more confused towards the end when she's like, are you all right? Because it's like, that feels genuine, but I feel like she's still... She's not 100% genuine, so there's like a 0.001.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about Missy at this point. So,
yeah, that was my little take on it, but sorry, continue.
So you thought it was a bootstrap paradox for an entirely different reason, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's fair enough. That's a possible theory. I guess we'll find out, I'm guessing, in the finale, if it does come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just... I have no hesitation watching this episode over and over again. It's just so good. It's so good. I want to watch it right now, but I can't, because I'm still doing a podcast. Sorry. I did actually go rewatch The Snowman, by the way, after
we did that podcast. I did as well. That night.
So good.
I love that episode. It gives me tingles.
Such a magical episode. That was a really weird noise. I don't want to know what
I
that was. But...
I was crazing my Cold War ice warrior. Everybody's now.
I hope
that
so.
That doesn't help the situation
I hope
at
so.
All. No. Either way, it's still freaky, but there you go.
Alright, so, do you guys have any other thoughts before we talk about the next time trailer?
No.
No.
No? Alright, Eaters of Light. Initial impressions.
I don't know. I don't know about this one. I don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't look that great, but Connor, what do you think?
It could be another Sleep No More, and that's what I'm internally worried about. So.
Oh, I hope not. I hope it's not that bad.
I can't not agree. I don't think it might be that bad, but I don't think it's going to be a great episode. I think it'll be good at most, but you never know. That's the thing about episode, like, next time trailers, they can be very deceiving. But yeah, I'm just... there's minor intrigue, but mostly iffiness.
Yeah.
The
intrigue is definitely there. It's just, I'm more worried than intrigued for this one. But I'm going to try and keep an open mind to a point. But we'll see. It could surprise us. It could be the greatest episode of Doctor Who to ever exist. You never know. It won't be, but still... We could be pleasantly surprised.
Indeed. Alright. Do you guys want to get into the best of Series 7 Part B? Or Part 2, however you want to call it?
Let's.
We have to.
Oh, that's nice. Nice way of saying it.
Yeah. Let's. What's the order this week, George?
Ooh, the order this wonderful week is. Blah, 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 blah. That was disgusting.
That was terrible last week, and it's still terrible this week.
Nick at number uno, me second, and Connor lucky last.
Oh boy.
Ooh. All right, man. This was such a tough one, because Most of it was pretty mediocre for me.
Same.
Which is a shame, because, as I said, this was my first series, so... Mm. It was our first... There's a car go past. It was our first basic introduction into Clara. I don't know how to feel about this one. But I do have some nominations, fortunately. I will address them. So, my first pick goes to The Bells of St. John.
Mm-hmm.
What an interesting way to reestablish a companion. Like I was a bit bitter when Victoria and Clara wasn't the main companion. It was modern day Clara. Like, I had that bitterness, but I really liked the idea of the Doctor secluding himself in a monastery with this image of this one woman trying to figure out who she is. And then then all of a sudden things come together because of a phone call, and the dialogue so good. It's like, it's 12:07. It's like, I got 3:15 over here. It's like, are we in a different time zone? It's like, yeah, you really are. as I said, the dialogue's great as usual. I like the Spoonheads. They're an intriguing concept, and I like Miss Kislet as a villain. This episode also has some phenomenal music, by the way. Just Up the Shard in particular. We've used this as an intro music for one of the episodes. Can't remember which one it was, but and also without this episode, we wouldn't have our outro music of Ba Ba Biker, because oh man, what a catchy song that is.
Just love it.
I also like the great intelligence reveal, although I don't understand why. If I'm gonna be honest, I don't understand why the great intelligence was the Series 7 B baddie, but that was a really cool reveal at the end. Also, we got reintroduced with Unit at the end of that episode with when they stormed the building. I don't think it's the best episode that Moffat's written, but it's still a really enjoyable one, and for that reason, I'm going to pick The Bells of St. John as my pick.
Were we going to go down, the first half, one by one, or are we nominating?
There's 8 episodes, so I feel like...
Yeah, fair enough. I was confused, so I thought I'd ask.
Yeah, I think with Series 7 Part 1, there were only 5.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So we may as well talk about all 4, but there were 8 here, so yep. I think we might be able to get a couple at least. Might not be much, but yeah, I don't want to go through every episode.
Yes.
If we've got to be honest.
Now, okay, I think this is me. Hold on. Yeah, it's me. Yep. All right. Look, Season 7 is not, in my opinion, a good season, a great season. I wasn't as satisfied with this one as I was with the first half. So really what it came down to for me was 2 or 3 picks. I'm gonna, for the sake of, me not rushing, I'm going to stretch it to a third. And I'm going to go for The Crimson Horror as one of my picks.
Ooh,
so
very topical.
Yes, so this isn't... Gatus. I'm letting you know, it's not my favourite season, best of Series 7, but I think it's one of the strongest, in my personal opinion. obviously, the presence of our favourite gang... Paternoster Gang with Vastra, Jenny, and Strax. It adds a good bit of humour to it. But overall, I thought this episode had... To me, it was something that I thought was interesting. It was freaky. I still get terrified by some of the aspects of this episode. But I enjoyed how fast-paced this was. I thought this was... The director... I'm not going to be able to pronounce his name. Saul... Medstein. Okay.
Yeah, you did a good job.
Thank you. He made this a very... I really like this directing, basically. And from a director's standpoint, that's one of the main things that I think this episode has going for it, personally. But, I thought in an episode of pretty weak... a season of pretty weak episodes, this one had an interesting story and great characters and good direction. So, Can't speak much about this one, but it's getting my vote as a potential best of Series 7.
It's got a great line, though. I can't remember the protagonist. She's like, you know what these are? The wrong hands. Like, she's absolutely batty and just
the voice
insane.
Just makes that. Oh, some of the accents is just... I love it.
Also, Clara throws a chair into a machine. That's always pretty funny to watch.
Look, Clara's a thing with, I really loved Clara with Smith. I don't know about Capaldi, per se. But in Season 7, I could not get enough of Clara. We didn't get much of her, obviously, but... goddamn, she was great. And this episode was a good example of that, because... Flowers, Clara.
Is it weird to say that the dynamic was great between them, but she didn't have much of a personality?
Yeah, that's the weirdest thing. With Capaldi, she was more fleshed out, but I got sick of her. Like, really sick of her. But with Smith, it was like, you know, you don't have much, but what you do have, I enjoy. It's sort of like that, but Clara's one of those where there are people who absolutely hate her guts and people who absolutely love her guts. AKA my brother, who's obsessed with her. To an extent where it gets a bit weird sometimes when I mention her, but Mr. Fax.
Well, I love Clara; she's a great guy.
Yeah, let's avoid that little alleyway. You know the tradition with me; I pick my favourite, and I do have a favourite of Season 7 Part B, and it is because it deserves it, but it's also because it's a standout amongst the rest of the mud. Sorry, I'm being a bit callous. My pick goes to The Name of the Doctor. This episode was probably the best acted, the best developed, and the most intriguing as to why the events are unfolding. The Great Intelligence, I couldn't give two shits about. He was just another...
Yeah, I feel you there. I feel you there.
I was going to mention, that's in my notes about that episode, fucking Great Intelligence, man. Anyway, continue.
The Whisper Men get me.
Good, yes.
I love the idea about them, that they're sort of like this child, children's poem sort of thing, but brought to life. I'd love to see, not an episode done about them, but I'd like to see them just pass by occasionally, because that's fucking terrifying. So just have it in the background, have a shot, have a window, don't put too much focus on it, but just have them walk by and just have the tiniest bit of whispering or something, or have whisper as part of the dialogue and have them pass by, because that would be legitimately scary. No,
they could definitely do an episode with that. I agree.
Oh yeah, that'd be brilliant. The Doctor landing at Translore and everything and sort of just going, crap. Cycling back a few moments, when Clara tells the Doctor that she's had the memory dream thing, whatever it is, the pan-dimensional dream, that he's been called to Translore. And Smith breaking down in that moment actually brings me a little bit teary-eyed as well. And it's just him sort of feeling so vulnerable. And it's a similar thing when Tennant regenerated. You know, him going, I don't want to go. This is sort of the equivalent for me, where he's just I don't want to die. So that vulnerability was really great. And then how River played out through this episode, where she's sort of present, but it's obvious that they CGI'd her in and she's not quite there until the final scene where the Doctor has to go save Clara because she's trapped in her time stream. I'll just side note with that one. Impossible Girl, her trapped along his time stream as a result, at the end of his life, he leaves scar tissue where of all the places he's impacted and everything. That was bullshit. That was a really crap reason. Sorry, I just had to point it out. But I liked what it lent itself to, you know, with everything sort of breaking down slightly, you know, because the Doctor has had such a huge impact. So if he was erased at every moment in time simultaneously, then, you know, that's what would have changed in his stead. But the moment
And it gives me chills, but the moment where River's just like, don't go in there, you know, be sensible, and he grabs her hand, and that sort of just, oh god, she's there, he can see, like, there's a thing happening, and it's just like, she's not even there, she's not real, and he's like, you will always be there to me, River, because you are always real. And it was just sort of that little sad tying off as Smith was giving up his time with River, and then he goes through and he finds Clara. He does the leaf thing, yeah. But then it's like, why was his name such a big deal? And then it reveals through the dialogue that his like name is like a promise. You know, you promise yourself if you're going to be nicknamed, you're going to be that person. You will be that person whenever somebody references it to you. You are the doctor. You are representative of good moral strength, of good choices, of being a hero, making the difficult decisions when, you know, nobody else can, and hold and taking on that responsibility for all the consequences of that. And then breaking that promise and not being doctor, and then revealing John Hurt. Oh boy, that's a moment in Doctor Who. So that's why the name of the Doctor gets my pick.
All right, is it my go?
Yep.
All right. So I'm going to tease it now. My top three have already been mentioned.
Same.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
But. So this kind of makes this next one a bit pointless, because I've just acknowledged it's not my favourite. But I want to give credit to Cold War.
So do I.
Because this was the thing about the new series is that it introduced like old villains in different ways, and the Ice Warriors were this very untouched character that was basically forgotten after the Third Doctor, basically. So it was really cool to see them back, and just this lone ice warrior on a submarine, on a Russian submarine, by the way, during the time of the Cold War. Get it? The double pun's fantastic. But I like what's the? Could you guys know the name of the Russian guy who constantly loves listening to music?
Oh, I had that in my notes. Hold on.
Da, 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 da.
Oh, the song. Da, name. Da, da, da. Duran Duran.
No, yeah, no. The guy that was listening to that, though.
Oh.
He was my favourite character.
I think he's played by David something.
David Bradley.
Please be right. Again. I'm going to check, because I actually wrote his name down, but I didn't.
David Warner.
He was
Professor Grisenko.
That, yes.
Yeah,
he was amazing.
Yeah, he was so good. He was kind of like this pacifist, but he was kind of like in the shadows pacifist. He didn't want there to be a war. Like, everyone else wanted there to be a Cold War, and there's this one guy listening to listening to Duran Duran in Ultravox. By the way, I love that Ultravox line, because Clara and them revealed it to be time travelers. And it's just like, I can't tell you all these things. It's like, Ultravox, do they stay together? And it was such a tension killer, but that was the entire point of him. He was there to calm Clara down. Because I think just before it, Clara was trying to talk to the Ice Warrior, only to find out the Ice Warrior wasn't in there to begin with. That was a cool twist, by the way. Uh-huh. I liked that a lot. I love how stealth the Ice Warrior was in this episode as well. Just taking out the Soviets one by one and finding out the weaknesses of the submarine. And, at the very end, this Ice Warrior ship coming down. Like, I really want to see more Ice Warriors, so when I saw the ship, I'm like, please may there be another. Fortunately, we got one, and it just happened to be the one we're talking about today, but I just liked the fact that they were setting up future Ice Warrior stories, and this was a great reintroduction to them. So my pick is Cold War.
There were some great performances in that episode, and hold on, give me a second. I think Cold War took that terrifying approach, like I hoped it would, with this week's episode. So I'm happy with that.
I just love that Hungry Like the Wolf disarmed bombs. Duran saved us again.
Bacon's...
sorry, because I thought...
I love The Hunt for October, so this episode also gave me that little throwback,
yes,
so that was nice.
Yes, it did. Yes, I agree.
Alright. I have no more. I cannot possibly pick any more. Or then I'd be lying to myself, so... Mr. Fax, do you have any more to say?
I would just like to make mention of The Nightmare in Silver... And I've basically got... Yeah, I know.
Where are you going with this?
This better be good.
I will admit that it's a lot of shit for very little gold nuggets. So, I liked the way they sort of went with the Cybermen in this one. How it was like that focus on upgrading and sort of how machine became more machine-like and became very sort of regimented and focused, and it's like, solve a problem, make an upgrade. It was a little too easy how they made upgrades. It's like, oh, you know, electrocution. It's not like you're made out of metal. There's no way you can deploy sort of like robots to augment yourself, but or at least not that they showed. So it's like, how do you do that? But I liked how sort of terrifying they became in this episode. How it was like, you know, take off an arm that would disable Pete's world, Cyberman. But in this one, it's like, oh no, that can reattach. I'm still coming after you. I'm still this, like, not quite unstoppable machine, but I'm not so much cannon fodder anymore. I'm just, like, encroaching. And I also liked the Mr. Clever and Matt Smith duopoly that went on through this, how you sort of had back and forth.
Mr. Clever, yeah. Yes.
I mean, he got very eccentric for a cyber planner. So it's just like, I'm, you know, so-and-so, and it's like, you're a robot. Shouldn't you be, you know, withdrawn, cold, and less theatrical? But whatever. And it's something that I like, but when Matt Smith goes on and plays, like, back to previous incarnations of himself, where it's like, oh, fantastic, and then he's sort of like going on, it's like, oh, Adon Z, and him twisting it and sort of like making the Doctor a little bit like, oh god, this is not very nice at all. I don't know. I like that.
Doesn't he also do the Jelly Baby line as well?
That was I don't think they mentioned Jelly Babies, but in The Almost People, he does the Would You Like a Jelly Baby?
Yeah, he does The Almost People, yeah, I remember that, but I thought he also mentioned it in this one, but I can't remember.
I liked Porridge, just for the name. Oh, it was just like, Porridge, he's actually an emperor, but Porridge, who makes that nickname up for themselves? Like, that was just funny and cute. But yeah, I can understand why you guys would not want it in. It's not as golden as Boomtown. So, yeah. But that would...
I would love Nightmare in Silver if it killed off Artie and Angie.
Oh, yeah.
Bajo,
yeah,
hey,
I'm not kidding. I would love Nightmare in Silver if the entire thing was just that.
They are so Simon fucking annoying.
They were the worst part of Series 7, and that says a lot.
Season 7 was, yeah, a pretty shit season, and you can easily blame them for everything that ever happened. Well, you can't, but you know what I mean. They're so goddamn frustrating.
They're just crap characters. They're annoying characters. They're just... Oh, you wanted to strangle them.
Kids.
Or get a Cyberman to strangle them.
Do you think Doctor...
No, it's not the thing. Sorry.
Do you think Doctor Who just badly writes children? I mean, there's Fear Her, The Forest, and The Night.
Fear
Her! And then, the common denominator is children in these episodes, so maybe it's just, kiddies, no fun, don't get one.
I like how they I think I know what you're going
to
say.
I think for the most time they are, but I think it depends on the writer. Like, Stephen Moffat, Listen, for example, is a really good characterization of Rupert. I thought he was well done. Even, like, the young... the Return Doctor Mysterio, the kid in that, I thought he played it pretty well. But I think for the most part, children shouldn't act. that's just my thought. Children shouldn't act for the most part.
Yep.
Just leave the adults to do it.
That's fair children, enough.
Children and animals. I mean, they got a canine because they know. They're like, we can't actually get a real animal because we know. So let's just get no kids and then we can solve the... What I said this time?
Hang on, no. And then we got In the Forest of the Night, which combines both.
And that,
and how did that turn out?
What does that say about the statement? You don't work with animals or kids, and if you do, you get Forest of the Night. Just saying. Yeah, that's perfect. Oh my goodness gracious me!
I feel like that sums up the entire point of what you're asking.
That, anyway,
I've got one more.
Ooh.
I'm going to say that one of the best of Series 7. Was Hyde. If only because it really did do the creepiness of the episode really well. It does kind of lose its value as a result of the ending of it, but...
I reckon...
I'm
just saying, I think the first half is fantastic, and it could easily be in contention for best of, but I feel like the second half just fell flat and let down a bit, especially that ending, but... I do see where you're coming from, because it did creepy on you really well. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, no, that's basically it. I liked what they were setting up for, but I wasn't a fan of how it was resolved. And it was like, oh, no, the two aliens just happen to want to be in love with each other. I'm like, bullshit. that is not how you write an ending.
I love romance, like... It's nobody's business, but that was not called for at all. No one wanted that. No one needed that, and it should not have anyway.
That being said, I like the woman... I like the man and the woman in this episode.
Oh, they were fun as shit. I would want to see them somehow again. That'd be great.
I love a toggle switch. You're just fondling with the toggle switch. Oh, that's great. And I've got to give credit to the Rings of Akaten because it had a phenomenal speech.
Yeah.
Probably one of Matt Smith's defining speeches of his era, obviously, is the one where he talks to... Is the planet called Akaten? Or is it Grandfather? I think it's Grandfather. The planet. Yeah. That speech to Grandfather and... Oh, so good. That was such a powerful speech. It's a shame that everything else basically lacked that episode.
Yeah, that was, unfortunately.
That's all my thoughts. So, we're getting into actually choosing now the best of Series 7 Part 2.
Oh, this is going to be a short one.
I hope so. Mr. Name, you're first.
Yeah, well, Ringo, you get no say because the name of the Doctor wins.
Please. You think I would vote for anything else? The name of the Doctor is amazing in every way. And even though Season 7, even though it didn't have that much to contest with, it's still a good episode in its own right. So,
I honestly think the name of the Doctor is one of my favourite Smith episodes. I love about 95% of it.
So, I had Bells of St. John really high on my list. And I remember, this is Moffat's, in his eyes, his most average episode. And I can't... Like, I know it's probably not the greatest, but... So, Nick, you had that on your top three, right? Because I remember, I think it was one of the first episodes we discussed Moffat finding this episode really average. I don't know.
Yeah, he did, yep.
I thought it was good. I don't know. But...
I can understand why he thinks it's average, but there are definitely a lot of good moments in there that make up for... the really lull moments, but I just wanted to address. So, GCAP, is that your favourite as well, by the way?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Unanimous!
Easily unanimous. Name of the Doctor is fantastic.
Alright, cool. We'll do the applause. Yeah, that's a clap. Alright, so my top three.
Yes.
So I'm intrigued to see where you guys rank for this. So mine was Name of the Doctor, Crimson Horror, Bells of St. John. That was my top three, in that order.
Prax? Or should I?
One of you two?
You go first, Ringo.
Now mine, I probably need to rewatch, but as of now, it's Name, Bells, Crimson. So,
wow,
yeah.
So it's the same three, just different order.
Just two of them, yeah. Mr. Fax?
Name.
That's it, Name?
It was a rugged
shot. Perfect! Perfect!
Oh my
that
god.
Was, cause like, you could tell he was like, okay, yeah, two and three. You could just tell, and then he just...
That was great. Well done. That is totally...
You
totally,
win this episode.
That's totally a great moment.
And the best of GFX.
Yep.
Number... I don't know. We should do a best of GFX episode.
This has been another GFX moment.
Brought to you by GFX. There's many, many moments.
Gladly curate that.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, that's going to be great. Oh, man. But it's just... Yeah, Name of the Doctor was clearly the standout. It's just a shame that majority of it was just mediocre.
It's a shame we didn't... There was no chance for any arguments or any second round with the season.
I don't think I want to.
It was... I'm going to put up Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
God, don't
that would annoy a lot of people.
One episode.
Yep. So much potential, so poor in execution.
I'm gonna fake self-destruct the TARDIS. Oh.
Actually, that was probably one of the only parts I did like about that. He was trying to fake fake the destruction of the TARDIS only for it to actually happen. That was pretty funny. But yeah, everything was pretty crap. I didn't really care about the brothers in that episode. just how it is.
Still horrible.
I'm intrigued. So next week's going to be the best of the Series 7 specials. So this is going to be a really short one.
I wonder what will win.
Well, I'm intrigued because I could definitely see arguments for both.
So can I, but I wonder if we all... Because really, in this situation, we all side... I have a feeling we're going to side one way. But I would love to see us not slide one way. Because if two people... Yeah, no. It'll have to end in one round, right? There's no possible...
No, this is regardless going to be one.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was going to say. Because there's no possible way. But no, I hope one of us fights off against the other two. I think that'd be fun.
We'll see.
We shall see.
But until that episode... Where can people find you guys?
So I will be at many, 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 many movie events in the next month. So if you're in Melbourne and you're seeing something Edgar Wright related, say hi to me because I'll be that guy in the audience. But if you don't see me, I am on Twitter at GCAP42 and on Facebook at Blackwood Films. And just a reminder, Facebook and Twitter, we are on at BOTIAU. So get on that. It's good stuff.
Plus, we have a YouTube too.
We have a YouTube, yes, we do.
When are you going to make? When are you going to upload more episodes, man?
We're going to upload some episodes tomorrow. Expect 2 to 3 sexy apps tomorrow for your pleasure.
Interesting.
Yes.
Well, to be fair, it's our tomorrow, your past.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I realised that.
Yeah.
I've been busy with not really anything, so I probably should get back to doing that. It's like grabbing the past and just putting it in the present. It feels weird, but it's cool.
But great.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Because there's some throwbacks involved. Anyway, facts. People want to find you. Come on.
Moisturizing.
Okay.
No joke. I like have really bad hands right now because of the chemical soap. Otherwise, you can find me fully moisturized and like not in the act of doing it. Hopefully, that would be weird. Why do you watch people when they moisturize? That's a thing you do? I mean, I'm not trying to judge, but just... Okay. Anyhow, you can find me at Twitter under CST, sorry, C underscore ST underscore M, or on Instagram at CO underscore ST underscore MA.
Nice. All right, and you can find me on Twitter at MQuest63, on Facebook, Nintendo Quest. I think I might be starting to do more stuff with that, but we'll see. And on YouTube, nickname, good luck finding me. You could steal from me that time. but until the next episode, nickname out.
Lingo out.
Geofax out.
Well, let's be honest, right? Doctor Who will never die. It's one of those shows where it can never die.
It's already, yeah. Even if, look, the revive show definitely helped boost it.
It's withstood two hiatuses at this point.
Yeah. But, like, I think even without the revive show, the classic would still be, you know, it's still, you know, not dead. But now it's even, like, less dead because it's gotten a revived hit. But
well, I reckon it's actually increased in viewership in recent years.
Yeah. Like, if...
I think...
Sorry, you're saying?
I was going to say, I'd base it on a percentage because the population has, like, increased by 3 billion people since the 80s, so...
Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying, like, the viewership... Like, the show has become more popular. Like, it's now going to places like Comic-Con. And
yeah.
It's just packing up because the viewership is there.
If the show would be cancelled,
that's true.
Not it obviously won't be, but if it would be cancelled at the end of season 10, it would never ever die. Like it's reached a huge peak, and I think, you know,
I just wanted to get to like next year, like series 11. It's like, oh, we've already announced season 16 and 20.
We're that certain. We're like, ugh. Wait, I don't understand this. So plus Oz Comic Con just... Hold on.
Do you mean Supernova?
No. Oz Comic Con Facebook page is giving you the chance to win a double pass to see Transformers. But
woo!
It said win. I'm a bit confused. Can someone elaborate? Just explain to me why saying...
Because...
When you win something, it is because you win it... With unless otherwise specified, you win it without talent, luck, or
but
money.
Isn't a win a positive experience?
I was going to say, much like Transformers.
I'm going to be honest, last night looks much better than the previous ones, but I'm not holding my breath.
I've read some of the reviews. It's only just better than Age of Extinction.
Age of Extinction was a pile of flaming fucking crap.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
That's not saying a lot at all.
Exactly. No, it's just they have it's just the same shit over and over again.
I hate
it's
that movie more than I hate Battle of Five Armies, and that's saying something.
Mm.
Even though that movie doesn't deserve all my hate, it gets it. It bloody well gets it.
Shall we begin?
I'm ready when you guys are.
Yeah.
Yep, I've been recording for the past 5 minutes.
Yeah, I know, so, but that doesn't mean like...
We can easily use any of this, if you'd like, as a leeway into the death-defying Transformers and the guessing when Doctor Who will end, which is depressing. God damn, we've started off at a low. Anyway, when you guys are ready, I am ready to start.
Alright. 3, 2, 1.